السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. الحمد لله وحده والصلاة والسلام على من لا نبي بعده. الحمد لله وحده والصلاة والسلام على من لا نبي بعده. ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، ونشهد أن سيدنا ونبينا وشفيعنا ومولانا محمدا عبده ورسوله. قال الله تبارك وتعالى: أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إلا أصحاب اليمين في جنات يتساءلون عن المجرمين ما سلككم في سقر، قالوا لم نك من المصلين ولم نك نطعم المسكين وكنا نخوض مع الخائضين وكنا نكذب بيوم الدين حتى أتانا اليقين. صدق الله العظيم. علماء کرام، most respected brothers and our sisters listening over receivers, just a few minutes ago when I walked into the masjid, suddenly this ayat flashed across the mind, and of course it was recited in last night's Taraweeh also. So I take it as some kind of an indicator that something should be said with regards to this ayat, because of the so many thousands of ayat, and in last night's Taraweeh also so many ayat were recited and verses were recited, then why this verse? So I will not be able to go into any detailed tafsir of these ayat and these verses, and it is not the time for, well, there is not sufficient time for that. But probably the reason that it came into the mind is that we are coming to the end of Ramadan. We are coming to the end of Ramadan, and as generally happens, the moment the moon of Eid is sighted, then the masajid get empty. Those who are not even performing the 5 times salat throughout the year, but in the month of Ramadan, many, many people, a transformation takes place in their lives, and they start performing salat. Many people who were not giving charities and giving sadaqat in the month of Ramadan, they seem to give plenty of sadaqat. So we will come to that just now, that probably this is the reason. So Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala talks about the two groups of people. One is that group of people who will be imprisoned either in hellfire because of their deeds and actions, or they will be, as we have our detention centers, or we say awaiting trial prisoners, in our terms we speak. So like that, on the day of Qiyamah also, they will be waiting for the Hisab and Kitab to take place. Whatever is the explanation, but Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala is talking about the two groups. One is that group who because of their sins will go into Jahannam, especially the kuffar, the mushrikeen, the yahood, the nasara, those who rejected, disbelieved in Allah Ta'ala and His prophets. But in this it is said that it is applicable to all, both Muslims and non-Muslims. So these people who are the exceptions that Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala talks about are those people who will be in Jannat, those people who will be in the gardens. فِي جَنَّاتٍ يَتَسَاءَلُونَ. Now there again we say, then how will they be questioning the people of Jahannam, that how did you go into Jahannam? These people, if they are in paradise, they are in Jannat, they are in the gardens of Jannat, then how will they be questioning the people in Jahannam, that how did you go into Jahannam? How did you go into Jahannam? They will not be able to question, because they are in Jannat, how will they question this? So in Surah Araf, Allah Ta'ala has explained that. But here, for the purposes of understanding, it's not that it's going to be exactly like that, but I mentioned many times that science has done us a great favor. It has made things easy to understand. Science has made things easy for us to understand. The new technology has made things easy for us to understand. Now these days, don't we have video conferencing? Now where are those people? They're having video conferencing. People are sitting somewhere in America, China, and they are conferencing with people in South Africa, and they are seeing each other on the screen, and they are speaking to each other. Yet they are two different places. They are in two different places. They are in two different places. In two different places they are, but they are now conferencing with each other and they are talking to each other. They are seeing each other. So if man has been given this kind of technology where he can be in a different part of the world and he can still be conferencing and talking and discussing, then why should we have any doubt if the people of Jahannam are given that kind of conferencing facility, that kind of conferencing equipment, that they can see the people of Jahannam, that they can see what kind of suffering those people are going through, what kind of hardship and pain they are going through. And now they are asking them that what is it that caused you to go into Jahannam? So if Allah Ta'ala can give man that kind of aqal, then what is it difficult for him to create that kind of means for them to communicate? So all these things may have been difficult to understand those days. So the real iman is of those people who didn't have all this kind of scientific details, and they didn't have this kind of inventions and this kind of modern day technology, but they still believed in what Allah Ta'ala said in the Quran Sharif. They believed it more than they would believe what they see with their own eyes. Hazrat Maria Qibtiya, when this Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam's son Ibrahim passed away, so he was also very grieved. He said, Inna bi firaqika ya Ibrahim la mahzunun. O Ibrahim, we are also very grieved at your loss. But Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, being the Rasul of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, he was here to teach us lessons. That he fulfilled the rights of both, that on the one hand there was grief and there was tear, but on the other hand he did not say anything with his tongue which expressed a kind of dissatisfaction with Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala's decision. So therefore he says, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un, teaching us tafweez. Now that is a different subject, but what I'm getting at is that Hazrat Maria Qibtiya radiyallahu ta'ala anha, she was also very grieved, very sorry at the loss of the son. So he said, Oh Maria, if you want, I can ask Allah Ta'ala to open the doors of Jannat and you can see Ibrahim there being nursed now by the angels of Jannat. So she said, Ya Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, I do not wish to see. Now which mother would have said that I do not wish to see my child in Jannat? She says, I do not wish to see. I believe what you say. That is the kind of yaqeen they had. Because my eyes could see wrong and then my yaqeen can be affected. But if the Prophet of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam has said, then that is the truth. That was their yaqeen. Our eyes can see lots of things wrong. So here also, those people who brought iman when there was no such technology, like now when we discuss Mi'raj, then we will say Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam went for Mi'raj, look at the high speed spaceships and everything else nowadays. That is for purposes of explanation. We must believe that that was a mu'jiza. It was a miracle. It was Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala who took Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam with his qudrat and power. Outwardly, he made the arrangement of Buraq and everything else, and of Mi'raj, the lift. So here also, I was just getting across to you that sometimes this doubt comes in the mind that if these people are in Jahannam, in the fire of hell, then how these people of Jannat are now talking to them. So our doubt is in our minds and our heads. Therefore, the very first ayat of Surah Baqarah, Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala says, ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابِ لَا رَيْبَ فِي. There's no doubt. But Allah Ta'ala didn't say that there's no doubt in your minds and your heads. Allah didn't say in our minds and heads there's no doubts. He said there's no doubt in this kitab. That means whatever Allah Ta'ala mentions in the kitab is nothing but haq and the truth. If we have any doubt, that's a weakness of our own intelligence. We must question our own intelligence and have our own IQs checked up, that of what level it is. Because our IQs only work when it comes to knowledge of science and everything else. But when it comes to deen and sharia and Quran and sunnah, they, it won't work to that level of the prophets of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. Because they received wahi and revelation. There's no question of batil polluting it. So therefore Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala says that they will question them, that what is it now that led you to Jahannam, the people of Jahannam? That what is it that put you into Jahannam? Obviously in their whole life they must have done so many things which caused them to now enter into Jahannam. But the three things that they will mention, the first thing they said, that why did we come there? So they said the first thing is this, Lam naku minal musalli. In other words, we were not making our prayers, our salat. Now if it's the kuffar who are in Jahannam, then of course in this world the kuffar were not going to be asked to make namaz. They first had to believe in Allah Ta'ala. So for them we will say that that punishment is like multiplied because of their kufr and shirk, whatever is the punishment, it's multiplied because they also didn't make namaz. If they had become Muslims, they would have made namaz, then they would have had the high stages in Jannah. So these people, the first thing they will mention why we went into Jahannam is that we didn't make our salat. Now if it's the believers, then that is why Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal rahmatullah alayh, he says and takes that hadith sharif literally, when Nabi alayhi salat wa salam mentions that the person who doesn't have salat in his life, then he has committed kufr. So he takes the literal meaning that it is definitely commission of kufr. If the person misses salat purposely, he doesn't perform it, then he has committed kufr. As Shaykh Abdul Qadir Jalani rahmatullah, I have mentioned many times, he follows that madhab and he also says the same thing, that don't even make janaza salat of that person. Don't bury him in the Muslim graveyard. Now where all the ashiks of Hazrat Shaykh Abdul Qadir Jalani rahmatullah alayh, will we accept that fatwa of his? All of us, will we accept it? But indeed what they are saying, it is the madhab of Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal rahmatullah alayh. And those who take the meaning literally, that is when we say that these differences of opinion amongst the mujtahideen, it is a great ni'mat and a great blessing. If there had been only that one ruling of Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal rahmatullah alayh taking the literal meaning, believe me, our janazas, our Muslim graveyards would have been 90% empty. Because we wouldn't have been able to bury the person who was neglecting his salat day in and day out. One is accidental oversleeping. That is excused if it's accidental. But I'm talking about those who purposely, no reason at all, their alarms are set for 7 a.m. and 8 a.m. Especially when it's public holidays. Then the masajid, even those who are regular fajr prayers, they to distance themselves. I mentioned there was a court case in one of our cities. I won't give the name, but this happened about 10, 12 years ago, where the azan, there was a complaint about the azan, that it is too loud and it is affecting. So finally the matter ended up at court. So these people who took the case to court, that it is affecting our tranquility and peace, they had done an observation of the Fajr azan and namaz. They had parked outside and checked how many people are coming into that masjid. The court records are still there. When I was in the office those days in the Jamiat, it was sent to us. The court records are there. They said 5 people someday, 7 people someday, 3 people someday. But the azan was so loud as if the whole country must listen to that azan. And this is exactly what we are doing now, that our azans have gone so loud and we have 10, 12 masajid all around. And when, if any person has to complain that it's too loud, then we say, hit him, beat him up, he's anti-Muslim, and increase the volume. Now, are we doing any khidmat of deen? how many people really attend that masjid. For the locality, for the people around there, that azan. In the time of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, did they have such loudspeakers? And even now, go to thousands of masajid, do they have? So is it Quran Sharif? Is it Sunnah of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam that we must have the volume very loud? Yes, the day any person objects to the azan being given by the muazzin at a high-pitched voice, normal high-pitched, but high-pitched voice, sweet, melodious voice if he's giving, and if somebody says, no, we are going to stop the azan, then we will say that we'll make some kind of defense and jihad against it, and we'll demand our right. But to say that you have 20 masajid just in a small locality and everyone puts it full blast, what are we doing to the community? Especially Maghrib time when all azans have to take place at the same time. And generally also the azans are at a fixed time. Most of the masajid are at the same time. So one side is coming, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. One side Allahu Akbar. One side la hayya ala salah. Everything is just going one way. And we think that this is some kind of great service we are doing to deen. Then by raising the volumes very, very high, what happens is that there are some people who have had heart attacks. Some people have just returned from surgery. Some people have just returned from some other sickness. Or there are old people and or there are children who have just been somehow put to bed and sleep. Now we put it full blast. So many of them get up with a shock. Especially those houses which are right next door to the masjid. Now I have been saying this many times. But in these days, if you have to say this, it is as if you are also anti-Islam. So we must know what we are fighting for also. What does it cost to reduce and lower the volumes? Is it necessary that our azan must reach the other part of Morningside and other places, or the azan from that side must go to Westbrook? Allah Ta'ala give us hidayat. And those people have an authority of those masajid, if we've got some contact with them, some, and we can explain to them and they are people of understanding, then this is what we should request to them. The other day also we had somebody from the metro police here, he was checking on all the volumes of azan because that's the people are complaining it's too loud. So we said, Alhamdulillah, we have asked our masjid people to lower the volume. But it could be sometimes gone high. But then they said, no, we checked, but it's not this one, it's from another one. Why must we unnecessarily create problem? It's not farz, it's not wajib, it's not sunnah, nothing. Now I was discussing something else, we went there. So what I was saying is that these differences of opinion are generally a great blessing. Otherwise Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal rahmatullah alayhi, this is what he says, that a person who is neglecting his salat is committed kufr. Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullah alayhi, say arrest them, put them in prison until they make tawbah and start making namaz. So these differences of opinion are a blessing. But the fact is that these people in Jahannam will say that this is the reason why we came into Jahannam. Now read the fazail of namaz and read the warnings of not performing salah. There's so much. Read Hazrat Shaykh Zakariya Sahib rahmatullah alayhi's fazail in namaz. So I was saying, I was thinking myself that why suddenly this ayat came when I just walked into the masjid, whereas it doesn't seem to have any connection with Ramadan. And I was going to speak on something that of Eid now that is coming. So then giving it a little bit of thought, it seemed that this is one of the reasons that these kuffar, mushrikeen, and also the Muslims, the believers who were neglecting their salat when they will be in Jahannam, now the people of Jannat, they will question them, that what made you go into Jahannam? The first thing they will say, لَمْ نَكُمْ مِنَ الْمُصَلِّينَ, that we never used to make our salat, or we are very, very negligent with our salat. So after the moon of Eid is sighted, this is the first casualty, the first victim is namaz. Go to the masajid and see what happens. Those masajid which were even full at the time of Fajr namaz. Next thing there's like a eeriness and a quietness that has come over that masjid. Where the musallis are gone, the masjid also cries. The masjid also cries. Where are the musallis gone? So salat is the most important thing, and if we have already got into the habit now in the month of Ramadan of making the salat, then why go backwards? Why take steps back? Now we should move forward, that if we started now, then improve on that salat, make sure that we are steadfast and reap the benefits from Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. Again that question, what about salat will solve all the problem? Will salat solve all the problem? Nobody said that only salat will solve all the problem. And nobody said that only salat is Islam and is deen. They say, what about people making 5 times salat, but they're stealing and they're committing adultery and they are in the casinos and discos? So did salat make them go to the discos and casinos? We will say that if that person, salat is not stopping him and preventing him from those haram, then there is some great weakness in his salat which he must put right. Inna salata tanha anil fahsha'i wal munkar. It should have prevented him. But if it's not preventing him, there's something wrong with my salat. If my salat is still taking me, khuda na khasta, Allah forbid, to the casino, disco, adultery, fornication and porn sites, then something is seriously wrong with my salat. Because salat was the only thing in which the person detaches himself completely from the outside world and makes Allahu Akbar. And he truly believes that my Allah is watching and I'm standing before him. While we are fasting, we can still go to the toilet, we can still fast, go fast asleep, and our fast is still valid. A person who's fasting, does his fast break if he goes to the toilet? Does his fast break if he talks? The person's fast doesn't break, he's still fasting. But salat, the moment we make Allahu Akbar, then finish. No talk with any person now, no looking around here, there and everywhere, no taking a walk, nothing, you are now tied in before Allah Ta'ala. So it should make us conscious that Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala is watching. We should make us obey Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala's every rule. But if it is not making us do that, there's something seriously wrong with our salat. So we will say that if every car of that model is running on the road, and just our car is not running of the same model, then something seriously wrong with the engine of our car. So we should put it right. So that is the first thing they said. لَمْ نَكُ مِنَ الْمُصَلِّينَ وَلَمْ نَكُ نُطْعِمُ الْمِسْكِينَ. Feeding the poor. He said, we never used to feed the poor. Everything was for ourselves. There was no sadaqat in our lives. There was no charities. We were very, very miserly and very hard-hearted. They said, لَمْ نَكُ مِنَ الْمُصَلِّينَ وَلَمْ نَكُ نُطْعِمُ الْمِسْكِينَ وَكُنَّا نَخُوذُ مَعَ الْخَائِذِينَ. And with the vain talkers, we used to also engage in vain talk. The meaning of which is given that those people who were criticizing, mocking, teasing, ridiculing, and somehow trying to destroy the deen of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, instead of us distancing ourselves from such people or defending Islam and the Sharia and the Quran and the Sunnah, we also participated in the discussions and we also participated in their vain talks. So these were the three major causes of our entry into the fire of Jahannam. So as I stated that why this ayat came to mind, if you look at the second point also, it's the same thing. That as soon as Ramadan goes, then those charities that we undertook in the month of Ramadan seems to come to an end. We will give the poor people so much hampers in the month of Ramadan, that they too just wonder that how suddenly the Muslim has become so charitable. And then that person too prays, oh Allah, I wish Ramadan continues for the whole year. Like those days when a person dies, as soon as he dies, they don't even think that whether whose share is involved here or not involved. They take that person's clothes and everything and give it away to the muazzin or to some poor person. So they say those poor muazzins and poor people used to wait that some people must die so we can get some kheer and we can get some clothes and get some food. Because until they don't die, they don't get it. So after Ramadan also it must carry on. Probably in the month of Ramadan they gave more zakat or whatever charities. But that doesn't mean it must come to a stop. Do the poor people and needy people only need it in Ramadan? And also the third part, that as soon as Ramadan finishes, now we got ample time. Because there's no Taraweeh now. And there's no getting up for Sahri now. And there is no other tilawats of the Quran Sharif as in Ramadan. So now we engage in so much of gossip and idle talk and futile activities, and so much so that we even get caught up in all those criticisms about Islam instead of criticizing ourselves and finding the faults in ourselves. So as Ramadan comes to an end, tonight is still the 29th night, inshallah, which is a Mubarak night. It could be Laylatul Qadr also, and those who had some experience of Laylatul Qadr, then it doesn't mean that now this night must be neglected. Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala could have increased the barakat and rahmat because of those people who are negligent. It probably gives them on their qadr of that night. And again, it is the odd night, the last night, and as I keep on saying, the last of the flights of the odd nights. So let us make the best of it, make lot of tawbah, istighfar, make i'tiraf of qusur, ask Allah for forgiveness, inshallah ta'ala. If we stay on that path that we were in the month of Ramadan, our lives will become very beautiful, peaceful, our homes will become full of barakat, rahmat and nur. May Allah ta'ala bless me, bless you and the entire ummah with the tawfiq of amal. وآخر دعوانا الحمد لله رب العالمين.